welcome to This Green Earth. I'm Claire Wiley, and now I'm happy to introduce you all to Dr. Pablo Ribeiro Diaz, a professor, scientist, artist, researcher, engineer, and entrepreneur, who has just written a new book titled Climate Changed, The Science of Sustainability and How Each of Us Can Do Our Part. We are so happy to have you on our show today, Dr. Diaz. Thank you for coming on This Green Earth.
It's my pleasure. I'm very excited to be here and to be talking to you all today.
First, we'd like to set the stage a little with our guests and get to know you a little better and how you got started in sciences. So take me through a couple key moments in your life that led you on this path to studying sciences, and particularly how you got into solar energy.
Sure, I'll be happy to. So I've always liked those pesky things in school that people sometimes despise, like math, chemistry, and physics. And I was also very, very attuned to the environment from a little age, from young. And just thinking about, like, something was off, right? From a very young age, something was off. I couldn't quite put my finger on it. But, you know, in high school, I started to see the numbers, the data, watched a few documentaries, and knew that I wanted to do something related to the environment. And so I joined the engineering course. And as soon as I joined my, you know, first year, I already started doing research on recycling. And I never stopped, really, from that moment onwards. And when I graduated, I started a master's program on science and engineering for recycling electronic waste and solar waste specifically. And this is way before people were even thinking about this, right? Solar was very small. This is over 15 years ago, so solar is very small. And I just kept going in that path of research and teaching at university level. And at some point, I was tasked with teaching a course on life cycle assessment, which is a tool that we use to measure environmental impact in a nutshell. And whenever you're tasked with teaching something, you need to, like, really know it, right?
Sure.
You can't just know it in a shallow level. You need to go very deep. And because of that, I started studying how I was going to teach this to my students. And I saw the textbooks out there were really dense and academic. And it wasn't really easy to grab the attention of young people on a subject that they cared a lot about. So I started out this, you know, journey with the idea, I'm going to write something for my students. At the same time, I was, you know, a person that wanted to do my own share for the environment and wanted to understand how my impacts matter and what, you know, affects what the big picture or not. And so during that process of writing the book for my students, I ended up thinking that this is actually something that can reach many more people beyond university walls. And I decided to expand the book to reach a general audience. So now it became a book that is, it brings the science in a very accessible manner. No graphs, no equations, no tables. It's really just distilling it down to first principles and trying to explain things very clearly to understand, like, what are the things that matter the most? What are the things that don't matter that much? And what are all the things that you feel guilty about because you care about the environment that you shouldn't because they're actually a distraction? That was the premise of the book.
Sure. And let's dive into some of those themes, because you just mentioned that circular economy, and you delved into solar energy with founding Solar Cycle. And this relates back to how we deal with solar panels, correct?
That is absolutely right. And so, you know, through this journey of, you know, researching, being a researcher and a university lecturer, I ended up, you know, wanting to do impact beyond research. And I kind of got tired of telling people what I thought should be done and decided to do it myself, kind of thing. And so we launched a startup back in 2022. So I left the university in the process of finishing the book. I left the university and started Solar Cycle, which is a company that is deep in the circular economy space. What that means in a nutshell is basically, instead of taking things from Mother Earth, making these products that are amazing, and then disposing of them and putting them into a landfill to never be seen again, we take those same materials and then we repurpose them, right? Recycle them, we put them back into the supply chain. And we try to keep the materials as circular as possible to the point that, you know, ideally we stop needing to mine them from the Earth's crust. That's the ultimate goal that we're pursuing here at Solar Cycle. And we do it specifically with solar energy because we now have about 2 terawatts of solar installed to be able to achieve net zero, right? Which is our big objective for 2050. We need basically to 10x that. It's really a big spike in what we currently have. And one way to do that is to extract all these resources from the Earth's crust. Another way is to really just use the panels that are reaching end of life and that are no longer in use. And we can take those materials and put them back to make new solar panels. So it's something quite magical that we are trying to do. And our mission is to, you know, achieve that circularity.
So it goes more into the reuse, because we think a lot about that recycle process and how we use something, we put it in the recycle bin, and then it goes to the recycle center. But I think some of us shut off what happens after that. And you are trying to change that system a little bit more into the reuse realm is what I'm hearing.
That's right. We try to repurpose as much as we can in terms of solar panels, and we try to put the materials that we extract back into the same solar supply chain system. So to make it more concrete, you know, there's silver in a solar panel. We try to extract that silver and put it back into the supply chain so that silver does not end up in a landfill. There's glass in a solar panel. We try to extract that glass and put it back into the making of new solar glass for the additional capacity that we need. That's the whole idea behind it.
And as individuals, we often take the onus on this, and that is another theme to your book, is that individuals often will look at themselves and say, what can I do different? What can I do better? And really systematically across the board, we can change this at a higher level. But when we do talk about recycling, what are some of the ways in which we can turn that more into a reuse or a repurpose around our lives? Do you have any suggestions for us as we think about that circular economy?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the first thing is to use less, right? I think we need to start very upstream as much as we can. And it's about this idea behind better consuming, being better consumers, which starts with, hey, do I really need this? Or am I just buying this because somebody else is telling me to? Which is not that, it's easier said than done. But it also touches on things like, if I'm going to buy something, can I buy something of higher quality? And that might cost more in the short term, but it's going to last longer. And therefore, it won't produce as much waste, and it's going to be a net benefit for, you know, myself as a consumer, but for my bank account, but also for the planet. So the consumption part of it is quite important. And once you get to the end of life of a given device, it's just, you know, as individuals, just separating things in appropriate places is a big, big help. It goes a long way. So, you know, separating the materials that are recyclable from the ones that are not, separating things like your electronics, your computers, cell phones, and all, and disposing them in e-waste appropriate places as opposed to the general bin. Those things help a lot for recyclers because a lot of the energy and cost goes in just sorting the materials afterwards.
Yeah, and so maybe zooming out a little bit, because you do bring up, we have individual changes in ways that we can act, but also systematically things need to shift. What are some of the systematic things that you think would be good to change?
Yeah, I think that's the core theme of the book, right? It's trying to separate really what are the things that we can do individually that are small steps versus the ones that are big systemic changes that we need. Because often what happens is we get caught up on the little steps. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we feel guilty if we're not properly recycling. We feel guilty if we are driving too much. All these things that we do on our individual levels, which obviously if you can do something about it, you should, but you shouldn't get paralyzed because those are the little steps. And the truth is that even if we all did our part, each and every one of us started to ride a bike to work, we started all to eat less meat and do all these things, we would still have significant gaps that we need to address. And these gaps are precisely the systemic changes that we're talking about. That. And what are these systemic changes? Well, one of the key ones is decarbonizing our electricity grid, right? So going from a electricity grid that requires fossil fuels to one that is based on renewables with some abatement for us to achieve the famous net zero. And we can all, you know, strive for that. But as individuals, as me as an individual, there's very little I can do on my own house with my own meters to be able to change the electricity grid. What I can do is I can organize. And once we organize and participate in collective action, that's when we have much bigger impact and we can produce change. And so the book is all about how to, you know, what are the steps that I can take myself, and then how can I create this additional change that is needed in the world? And I break it down in three steps. The first one is just awareness and learning. And it's like learning more about the world, understanding what the impacts are, where they come from. We talk about obviously climate change, which is front and center for a lot of us, but I expand to other environmental threats like air pollution, acidification, ozone depletion, toxicity. And then just understanding the world better, like where, what's the current distribution of people, what's the population we expect to have in the future, where are we gonna stabilize? So that's the first step. The second step is the collective action. It's precisely, you know, how do I go about assisting with the efforts that are already ongoing, or how do I start my own efforts? And this is, you know, as simple as joining movements that are already taking place in your community, all the way to donating to support these organizations. And that's the second step. It's really collective action to promote change. That's where you can decarbonize the grid. That's where you can push for better regulations for air pollution, for more efficient buildings, or all these things that need to be systemic for that, us to change. Mm-hmm. And the third step on this whole chain is that of educating. Once you dominated the first two steps, the next step is to go out into the world and talk to your family, your friends, your colleagues, to explain these things, like explain these big levers, explain these steps, because collective action is all about, you know, us doing things together and pushing forward this wave.
You also talk in the book about empowerment, and there can be an unevenness due to socioeconomic differences. So when you speak about empowerment, what does it look like to empower everyone across the board?
Yeah, and I think to answer that question, it's great to put some examples to make it very practical. The first thing I'll say, which was really important for me in my own transformation, was a lot of the, you know, deflection that we see on pushing the blame from all the environmental chaos that we have today to the individual level is by design. This is not, you know, something that, you know, happened to randomly have occurred. Like there are big vested interests on keeping the status quo, and people, corporation, governments, they want that individual blame to be concentrated in individual, because that causes paralysis, right? That's what is labeled doomism today. Mm. So this is something that it's by design. I think it's important for people to know that. But then, like, to address your question specifically, it's really about, like, what is sustainability is about sustainability for the planet, but also sustainability for yourself as an individual. So if you're trying to do things that are not sustainable in your life, they're not going to last and they're not going to work. And here are a few examples. I used to drive to work, and then I started riding a bike to work. And that was very, very important for me as an individual. It reduced significantly my impact. It made, you know, me healthier. It made my commute more enjoyable. All these good benefits. So I could sustain that for a very long time. Long and behold, I'd since moved from where I lived in Sydney, Australia, to Arizona now, in which, you know, the commute is 50 miles, sometimes 25 miles, to depending where I need to go to work. You know, the temperature is 110 degrees mm-hmm. more often than not. Yeah. And so it's not sustainable for me to do that anymore. It's not something I can do. And so I could feel very guilty for the fact that I need to drive now instead of riding a bike, but my situation does not allow for me to do what I used to do. Another good example of this is eating meat, right? Eating meat, especially red meat, is one of the biggest environmental impacts on the individual level. And knowing that, I completely converted myself from somebody that ate meat basically every day to a vegetarian overnight. And that ended up not being sustainable for me. I, you know, was very miserable for 2 months, basically. And what I learned to do to make this sustainable for me was I now adjust my eating habits, and I eat way less meat than I used to. I used to eat it every day. Maybe I eat 3-4 times a week now. Always prefer to go for white meat over red meat. And this is sustainable for me, and I can do this, you know, for a very long time. So if I were to stop there because I couldn't do things perfectly, I would carry that guilt forward and not, you know, move on to the next step, which are the big picture steps, the things that I can have a big advantage over and can have big impacts, like writing a book about climate change like I did, like starting the company that I did. So these are the things that really move the needle.
Yeah. And while you're researching for this book, what were some of the points that jumped out to you that even though you were in this realm and you had lived in this space for a while, maybe took you by surprise or were things that you didn't think you would encounter?
Yeah, I love that question. So many things, honestly, but I think the two big ones are the individual impact and what it really means to live sustainably. So on the individual impact, I was trying to do my best, like I said, as an individual, because I knew it was important because I care about the environment. And I was often using my energy to make decisions that were not as impactful as I thought they would be. So again, just for clarity, it's very important for us to understand, like, if we all did our part individually, if we all did the best that we could, we would still have a gap to solve. And that to me was transformative when I understood that, because it allowed me to move forward from where I was. And here's a few examples of things that I was doing on my day-to-day life. I was going to buy a pizza at the supermarket, and there was a pizza that came from Germany. It was a vegetarian pizza, and I'm living in Australia. And it was a pizza made in Australia, and it had meat on it. And I was trying to decide which one was less impactful for the environment. And I literally ran the calculations myself, made the conclusion. And by the way, just to not leave anyone hanging, believe it or not, the one coming from Germany was actually less impactful.
Wow.
And I was doing all these, you know, trade-offs. I was getting to work. I was like, oh, should I stop taking the elevator, the lift to my floor and start taking the stairs every day to, you know, reduce my impact? And I was spending all this energy trying to make these decisions when I finally learned that, you know, these decisions, they only matter if I can make them sustainable, because on the collective level, they're not going to be that impactful. It really freed me from a lot of the guilt. It really freed me to be able to focus on the big steps. I think that was very transformative for me. And I would love for that to be transformative for your listeners today, Claire, because I know that people are carrying that guilt because they can't do everything perfectly. And so that's one of the key messages, one of the key things that I learned through this process of writing the book. The second one is around, what does it really mean to live sustainably in the 21st century? We're heading to a world with 11 billion people. That's where the UN believes we're going to stabilize the population of the earth. And, you know, in my mind, for us to have 11 billion people, and knowing that we're now overshooting a lot of things in the in our environment, I thought we had to, like, go back significantly in time with our comforts and the way of living we have today. And I was very surprised, positively surprised, when I dug through the data and saw that living sustainably in the 21st century does not require us to basically go back in time. It still allows you to have a car, to have a laundry machine, to have a house with air cooling and heating. It allows you to have internet, plenty of energy. It allows to eat comfortably. And it only needs, you know, us collectively to reduce a few things, a few luxuries that we have. Like I said, if all of us have to eat meat every single day, that's not going to be sustainable on the long run. But if we collectively drop that to 3 days a week, that's something that is sustainably in the long run for us as our systems develop. So it was very important for me to, like, really have the data in front of me, understand what that looks like. It made me very hopeful for the future.
Yes, and I love all that you have just said, because it culminates into this data-driven optimism. And data and optimism, when it comes to climate, don't often marry each other, because
right.
When you look at the data, it's hard to be optimistic. But when you have a book like this that's bridging science with sustainable actions, it feels like we can digest it and that we can work through it in a positive way. What is the most important for you to convey to the readers?
Couple of things that I would love for readers to take away from this book. One is to understand that while the situation is bad, right? This book doesn't come and say, like, it's all good, don't worry about it. The situation is bad, but it's getting better. I think that's one of the key things, again, supported by data, right? We're going in the right direction in many, many different things in spite of some of the headlines that we see. And so are we going fast enough? I don't think so. We definitely need to accelerate, but we are heading in the right direction. And I think that's very important and empowering and hopeful. The second outcome I'd love people to take is, like, what can you do in your life? Because the things that you can do and that I can do are completely different, and we have our different situations and availability and resources. And I'm sure that the readers going through the book are going to think about things that they can do in their community, in their lives, in their families, in their local governments, or, you know, their states, that are going to be very, very impactful. And having them get rid of the guilt that they feel today and that often cause paralysis and move towards these big steps is going to be transformative for society and for the world in general. So that's my humble hope here.
Your book has been hailed as having a very down-to-earth approach that we can all absorb. Was that maybe the hardest task, to make this so attainable for everyone?
Probably. I think You could say that. Yeah. It was not easy, especially going from academic studies, like trying to teach something that's very, very, has to be very precise to going to a general audience. The bridge between staying true to the data, but also making it accessible is something that it wasn't easy. I had to go a lot of, there was a lot of back and forth, and I had a lot of people contribute to this and read and give me thoughts. And I think I found a really good balance. The book is, heavily cited. There's like over 300, I think, footnotes and citations for the references that I was using, right? So I was trying to be very true to the sources of data. But at the same time, like I said, there's no graphs, there's no tables, there's no equations. It's really, just storytelling and practical examples and things that happen in my life or of that of my friends that can relate back to like things that people can do in their lives and situations that they probably live through. Just to give one of many examples, there's a story about this one time that somebody threw trash in the ground in front of me, and I, almost became this very big fight because I was like trying to explain to them like how big of a deal it was, how our plan was that. And I know that a lot of people go through that experience too. Like they see other people doing something and they, flip out because how can you not know what's going on, and how can you not do your part given that there's probably a trash can so very close to you. And these kinds of stories, I think they're important because people see themselves there too. They've been there. They've seen somebody drop something from their car and they're like, flipping out. And it puts a perspective into that. Like, how much does that matter? How much should you focus on that event versus some other things that you might not be paying attention, but that can move, can have much higher leverage in respect to that paper ball that I was so, raged about.
Right. And you do talk about that in your book, that maybe some of the ways that we thought we were making the most impact might not be the biggest impact, but those little other things that we can do to move forward are actually the ones that are going to add up even more. So keeping that balance and understanding better how to execute these things in the best way for ourselves and our planet is really great information. So we appreciate you putting this together in such a digestible read. The book is called Climate Change: The Science of Sustainability and How Each of Us Can Do Our Part. Where can people go to learn more about your work?
I have a personal website. It's pablodiaz.net. There's a lot of free resources there and different things that I'm doing, like the company Solar Cycle. It talks about the book, and you can have direct links there to how to find the book. There's also a free resource that I've created recently, Claire, that I'll be happy to share with you for your listeners, which is a like a two-page guilt-free reset in which we, talk about these big picture things we discussed today in a very simple two-page format that people can read in 5 minutes, which I'll be happy to share with you.
We have a very sustainably minded community, so I'm sure they would love that. Thank you so much, Dr. Pablo Ribeiro Diaz, a professor, scientist, artist, researcher, engineer, and entrepreneur who has just penned the book Climate Changed: The Science of Sustainability and How Each of Us Can Do Our Part. Thank you so much for being a part of this Green Earth today.
Thank you, Claire. Appreciate your time and very happy to be here.
Thanks for listening to This Green Earth. If you have an idea, we'd love to hear from you. Give us your ideas and topics, your storylines. It's thisgreenearth@kpcw.org. You can also find us wherever you listen to your podcast. If you like the show and you learned something new, make sure you leave a review. And we'd appreciate it if you click 5 stars.